Hi everyone, it's Diane with New Jersey Revolution Radio. This evening, I am so happy to have with us Daryl Lamont Jenkins. Before we get into our interview, I want to let our viewers know that we have a very special event this Saturday, that's December 15th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in New Brunswick. We're going to have a special screening of the documentary Alt-Right Age of Rage, which features Daryl Lamont Jenkins. And we're going to have a special question and answer session with Daryl. And I think we're going to have some food. And it's going to be a great event. There is a suggested donation of up to $25, we'll say, but no one will be turned away. So there is no required cover charge. So please come on down. I'm very excited about the event, and I'm so glad to have you on this evening. And oh, let me do our quick promo. We are a people-funded program, New Jersey Revolution Radio. So please, if you can, no amount is too small. So go to njrevolutionradio.com and there's a donation link. Thanks, guys. So, Daryl, how are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. I'm looking forward to this weekend. I very seldom do public events, and it's now starting to happen. It's just really been going on for the past 2 years. But this is one of the few events that's been focused towards One People's Project, myself, and what it is we do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how people from my area, the area that I grew up, take it in. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was looking at some of your bio information. So you spent some time in Newark, New Jersey, but then you grew up in Somerset County, and that's just a hop, skip, and a jump away from New Brunswick. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I spent very little time in Newark, New Jersey. I was born in Newark, New Jersey. My okay. father moved us out of there the next day.
Ah, okay.
Oh, because what happened was he came back from the hospital. Today's his birthday, actually. He's no longer with us, but today would have been his 77th anniversary, 77th birthday. And he went home after I was born. I was their first child. He was a new father. He was happy as all can be, but he needed to relax. He laid down his head on the bed. As soon as his head hit the pillow, bullet right through the wall.
Oh my gosh!
There was a couple that was ticked off at each other, shooting at each other with rifles. So he said, "You know, maybe Newark isn't the best place to raise a kid." So he packed up everything into this little yellow Toyota, including the baby grand that is still with us today in this house. So the next day, he just went to the hospital and told my, "Hi, honey, we moved."
Oh, wow. Your mom was still in the hospital.
Oh, yeah. So we've been living in Somerset, New Jersey ever since.
Oh, wow.
Which means we've been here. We've been in Somerset, New Jersey for 50 years. I'm 50 years old. So.
Oh, okay. Wow.
This is my home. This was Somerset, New Jersey was my home. And that's where I grew up. And I did eventually live in Newark on my own, living with my grandmother back in 1991. But, you know, Somerset, New Jersey, New Brunswick, that's me.
Wow. And so let me ask you, before we get into talking about the org and the movie, what was it that got you into doing what you do and where you are today? How did we get from there to here?
Well, you know, it's funny because I haven't explained this a lot lately, so I'll just break it down. When I was a kid, I was always interested in what happened to those in the civil rights movement. In particular, I was wondering what happened to those that were fighting us. So you will read something in the Weekly Reader, and there was something about the Klan, and I was like, the Klan still exists. We still have to fight them, huh? Mm-hmm. Or what's going on? And it was a guy named Bill Wilkinson. And Bill Wilkinson was a Imperial Wizard of the Klan back in the 70s. He's now a multimillionaire hotel owner down in the Caribbean. And it's a long story. But he was also, he was found out as a federal informant, but now he's a multimillionaire somewhere in Bahrain, not Bahrain, in one of the islands out there. But anyway, that was my introduction into white supremacy in this day and age. Eventually, I would see things like, I would learn about a guy named Tom Mesko, who was in the Klan when I first saw him. And then there was a movie called Skokie, and you know, that's my upbringing. That's how I was introduced to white supremacy back in the day. But when I was in the Air Force, and I was working as a security police officer, I was watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she had a show about skinheads, or what they were calling skinheads at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
when was this? Was this like in the 80s at this point?
This was definitely in the 80s. This was definitely, I believe it was 1987 when she had this show.
Okay.
And it was just like, okay, I need to start documenting this. I need to start saving this because it's going to be useful in the future. So I even bought the transcript. I never bought, and back then when you weren't, we didn't have VCRs. If you wanted to save the TV show for future reference, you would order the transcripts. I still had the transcript. So, I got that, and eventually I just started recording. I got a VCR and started recording every time a Nazi would show up on TV, just saving it for posterity's sake. Eventually, I started listening to talk radio and started realizing that some of the same themes were coming that I heard on white supremacists. Chatter I would hear on talk radio, particularly Bob Grant at 77 ABC. So it just started being a mixture of whites dealing with full-on on the fringe white supremacists and mainstream conservatives, and that's been my life for the past 30 years. One People's Project started in 2000 as a response to a white supremacist rally being held in Morristown, New Jersey on the 4th of July that year. And we just been rocking and rolling ever since. And oh, by the way, we started One People's Project in New Brunswick because I was living there at the time. So
it has its roots very heavily in New Jersey. Is that
right? Exactly. It definitely did. That's where it all began. In particular, the Rutgers University campus. I lived at 230 Sanford Street. And that's where it all began. I mean,
wow. And I think a lot of people have a misconception about New Jersey, because you know we're up north. Mm-hmm. But you were involved with, like you said, in 2000, in a white supremacist rally in Morristown, and the work you do starting out of New Jersey. I guess you could probably tell us some really enlightening info about the racists amongst us right here in New Jersey. Is that correct?
Well, it was funny because back then, you're talking about, and even now to a degree, right wingers in New Jersey are afraid of their own shadow. They know that when they just come out of their faces, we're just going to break it. Uh-huh. And it was pretty much the case back then. You didn't have a lot of white power rallies in New Jersey. You had to go somewhere else if you wanted to actually see them. And I really didn't see them back in the 90s. The rally that took place in 2000 was a rarity. But it was a rarity that was starting to become less and less of one. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why people felt that they needed to mobilize. But for the most part, when you want to look at white supremacists in New Jersey, you really have to look for those that were trying to hide it, trying to conceal it under other forms of conservatism. In fact, I went to New Jersey Right to Life conference back in 95. And that was when I found a lot of the white supremacist activity But you had to really dig. You had to look at the literature. Pat Buchanan was the keynote speaker of this thing.
And this was in New Jersey?
In 95, yes.
Oh, wow.
In Somerset, no less. Wow. At the Doubletree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now,
a couple of years later, New Jersey Right to Life invited Joseph Solbrand as their keynote speaker. And he regarded himself to be a, in his words, a counter-Semite. So that's how nasty the right could be. But what you have to know what you're looking for. You had to really look for it and know what you're looking at. Because at that first New Jersey Right to Life conference I went to, it was where I got my first bit of far right propaganda. And it was a thing called the media war against the Serbs. This is the kind of ways you would find this kind of stuff. You didn't find people running around unless you went to South Jersey, you wouldn't find a lot of people that were openly WP. South Jersey, they had it all over the place. I didn't go to South Jersey all that much, simply only for no other reason other than the fact that I didn't really have a car all the time.
Yeah. Central and North Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But South Jersey, especially Atlantic City, where the Atlantic City quote unquote skinheads were popular, they had the run of the place. But of course, when some of the AC skin members came to New Brunswick, they got chased out of here. Okay. And that was back in 95 or so. But that was a rarity. That was a real rarity.
Yeah, and back in the, like you said, 95 and in the 90s, we didn't even have the ability to, because you were somebody who was early into doxing and getting information out, and we didn't even have that capability in the 90s. So you had to do this kind of footwork and research on your own without the Google search engines and everything else.
Exactly. Right? It was really, I was doxing as best as I could back then. I was trying.
Yeah.
I didn't call it doxing. I was just gathering the information in the hopes that I could use it sometime. When the internet happened, that was just like a boon to me because all the videos that I had been taking at rallies or all the literature, all their propaganda that I had been grabbing or just listening to Bob Grant let neo-Nazis leave that contact information on the ABC airwaves.
Wow.
That was useful. Eventually, but I had to record all that stuff and I had to keep it. And it really wasn't useful until, the internet happened and then people got a chance to understand, see exactly what we've been saying. But it was tough. It was real tough. I mean, you think about the fact that, you had this magazine promoting Donald Trump back in 99. George magazine, that was John F. Kennedy's magazine. And I think he had passed on before that happened. But no one really thought of Donald Trump being anything of issue. I mean, he was with the Reform Party. And no one thought that he was gonna be the standard bearer of white supremacy in the country.
Yeah, I don't think he realized where he was going to
end up.
Yeah.
I mean, he was talking about running for president in that article, but he wasn't talking about how he needed to build the wall or anything like that. That came later.
Yeah, none of this make America great again rhetoric.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So when did the One People's Project start? When did you found that organization?
Well, as I said, it was formed out of the white supremacist rally in Morristown, New Jersey, on July 4th, 2000.
Okay.
To be nuanced about it, our first meeting was April 17th, 2000.
To get ready for it?
It was at my house. Yeah, okay. It was at my house, or actually my grandparents' house up in Newark. But we really mobilized seriously on April 17th, 2000 at my house, 230 Sanford. And it was because a guy, former Rutgers graduate named Richard Barrett, who lived in Mississippi at the time, wanted to hold a rally in Morristown to support then New Jersey State Police Chief Carl Williams, who was getting in trouble for his seemingly supportive racial profile, and he got ousted because of it. So Barrett decided to come up here, and we decided to go out and oppose him, and we came out deep. We came out very deep to his three or four people that that showed up. Eventually, one of them, incidentally, became a member of the Atlantic City, quote unquote, skinheads, and he still is today.
And, oh, wow.
Barrett's passed on, so we don't worry about him all that much anymore. But, you know, One People's Project is still here. We just basically decided that we started a website to coordinate our efforts around that time. And then after the rally, we just said, you know what, we're keeping the website and we're going to start going after everybody. So by April, when he decided he was going to have an awards ceremony in Manville, New Jersey, we was able to just say, hey, look, we got an issue in town. And the mayor and the VFW hall where they was going to hold this rally shut it all down before they even, as they came up, it was all told to leave.
So these were two rallies close in time. And were they both billed as, I know they come up with clever phrases to try to disguise. So what were these rallies called? Do you remember the names?
Well, I can't recall. There was a particular thing that Richard Barrett called his, of the nationalist movement, called his rally. I can't recall the name of it at the time, but it was something in support of the police. I definitely can't remember it, but I do remember that the award ceremony that his supporter John Kuchek's put together was called, was billed to get the VFW hall. It was billed as a financial planning seminar. John Kuchek was a CPA.
So that was the front for this gathering. So that's
gathering. But because certain people was making noise about it on the fledgling internet at the time, and they didn't think anybody was going to notice, we found out about it, make some noise about it, and the next thing you know it, we just basically bum rushed the place. But we didn't have to bum rush it all that much because the town took care of it. The town.
Great. So you had a good turnout come out from the locals?
Yeah, the locals, the VFW themselves did all the work. They didn't want this nonsense there.
Okay, good.
And
what did they do?
So when we showed up, Manville had shut it down. We decided to just talk to the mayor and everyone at the time that was standing there, let them know that we're the good guys. Mm-hmm. And there was only about four or five of us standing out there because we heard that it was going to be shut down. And then they still showed up. So when they showed up, they were turned away. They were told, hey, you got to leave. So Channel 9 was there, WOR was there, and they videotaped the whole thing. Actually, the news footage of this is on YouTube now.
Oh, wow.
And
what could we search if we wanted to find, do you remember any search terms?
You know what? Here's where I put my glasses back on.
Okay.
I just had an issue with my glasses because I was looking at myself on the film on the monitor and noticed that I'm like glowing in the eyes, and I was just like, oh, that's all right. That's
sorry.
Not your fault. So basically what the deal was that after that we didn't really have any issues with the nationalist movement afterwards. I mean, we didn't see them in New Jersey. They had one other rally in 2001.
Okay.
And that was just basically a return to basically, I guess he had something to prove, but it ended up being even worse than the last time. And
did he return to Manville, or was this Morristown?
No, he went back to Morristown. He went back.
Okay.
To and the end result was him being turned away yet again. And but it was worse too, because what happened was in that following one, some of our side ended up infiltrating, acting like he was one of them. He was one with them, and they just messed up his equipment and the rest was history. Still having problems trying to find this thing. Let me make this.
Okay.
So basically what happened was they had, after they had, after we had shut down the, whatchamacallit, the event.
Mm-hmm.
After we shut down the event, we ended up just following other neo-Nazis as we went along. And mm-hmm. that's really what started the whole doxing and pretty much what we have today with One People's Project.
So what is the mission of the One People's Project? If you had to like sum it up in a nutshell, what is the primary?
Well, One People's Project is a resource. It's a resource for those who are trying to find out what exactly it is that we're fighting. We are basically trying to research and report on all those right wing groups and individuals. And we say right wing because it's not necessarily racist.
Okay.
It can be homophobic. It can be anti. It can be misogynist. It can be anti-religion. I mean, rather anti-Semitic or anti-Muslim.
Anti-immigration.
Anti-immigration. I mean, it could just pretty much run the gamut. And our mission is to simply report on the people who are the problem. Let them know why they are the problem, and encourage people to more or less be productive against them.
Ah. Okay.
And if you go to YouTube, that thing that I was talking about in Manville is called White Supremacists Busted Trying to Fake VFW Out. October 18th, 2000.
October 18th, 2000. So I'm going to look that up.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm assuming, you know, thankfully we don't have too many white supremacist rallies in New Jersey, but I bet you if you...
Well, thanks for changing it.
Yeah, it can happen and pop up anywhere. Yeah.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I'm glad that this event is happening in New Brunswick, because there seems to be a few knuckleheads from Identity Europa and other groups that want to try to cause some grief on campus at Rutgers. And they've been flyering the area, they've been flyering the campus, but they're not making themselves prominent. And we just want to let people know, hey, it's time to be proactive against them yet again, and basically put the fear of God in these clowns. Now, interesting thing about this group, Identity Europa.
They have a presence at Rutgers, New Brunswick right now?
They seem to have a presence in not just Rutgers, but in New Jersey overall. They're and Europa is spelled E-V-R-O-P-A, because they think they're Roman. It used to be called the National Youth Front.
Okay.
And a group called the National Youth Front used to basically, there's another group called the National Youth Front says, no, that's our name. Copyright infringement, change your name. So they did. The guy that used to run National Youth Front was a character named Angelo John Gage.
Okay.
From Brick.
Okay.
And he eventually gave it up. He was actually the second person to run the group. The first person, Caleb Schumacher, left, or rather was kicked out, because the group found out he was dating outside of his race and married outside of his race. So Angelo John Gage took it over, and then he left. And then Nathan D'Amico, from California, who was with the group the entire time, became the head of the group. Then he left. Mm-hmm. And someone named, he called himself Eli Mosley. His real name is Elliot Klein. He was there for a while. And then he left because he was lying about the fact that he went to Iraq. He didn't. And now it's currently being run by someone named Patrick Casey. And Patrick Casey keeps a low, unlike the others, keeps a low profile. And it's not too low that we can't go after him, but nevertheless, low enough that he just doesn't get himself in as much trouble as all the other ones do.
And he's the new leader of Identity Europa?
Yes, yes. Okay. And that's the group that we see running around in Rutgers, or rather we don't see them because they like to sneak around and post things. Sucks to be them that they can't be as open as they would love to be, as they used to be just last year before Charlottesville. Yes, they were in Charlottesville. They have to do flash mobs now. They have to post their flyers secretly now because we scared them after Charlottesville. They realize that we will fight them. And that's what we're going to see in the documentary.
Now, with Identity Europa being local and a presence at Rutgers, are they actually trying to recruit? Do they have contact info? Are they trying to have meetings? What's going on?
Well, not really sure what it is they want to do. I'm quite sure that they have their ways of recruiting. I'm quite sure they just basically want to show people that they're there. And Antifa's out there going, well, thank you for that information, because we want to go get you. There's another group out there called the New Jersey European American Heritage Association. And they just did a little bit of a flash mob down in Princeton. And so they're another group that people are zeroing in on. They try to remain anonymous, but one of the guys, in fact, the leader, was already profiled on Twitter as working for the New York Daily News in Jersey City. And Jersey. Wow. And this is where all the doxing and information really is useful, because without it, we wouldn't know who any of these characters are. We have a state prosecutor in Jersey City. A public defender in Jersey City named Joel Marasco, Marasco, that we've been talking about him for a while. When we first heard of him, he was just a regular family attorney, but we also knew him as a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens, a white supremacist group. Oh. Now we find out that he is a public defender in the state, and he's still there. And we really need to do something about that.
Yeah, depending on what type of caseload he handles and what type of record. So I'm guessing you're going to continue to be on that to find out what his involvement is.
Yes, absolutely. Because that caseload, as I keep trying to tell people, when you're talking about Jersey City, it's going to include black and brown people looking to him for defense. You're not going to.
If there's something to be discovered, I know you'll get it.
Hopefully, we all will, because this is not something that one people's project. This is not a task that we should take on ourselves. I mean, we weren't even the ones to expose Joe Marasco. Those were other people who had been writing about him and been studying and researching him and other white supremacists in the area. We're just pushing it along. We found out about the public defender thing, but all the other information about Marasco came from other people. So it's not just us. It's not not even just Antifa. It's everybody, the community that says, we gotta do something. So let's try to find the thing to do.
Identify where the problem is and what the problem is.
Exactly.
So, you were touching on Charlottesville a little bit. So the screening on Saturday is the documentary Alt-Right, Age of Rage. So could you tell us a little bit about the documentary and how you found your way down to Charlottesville, and I guess give us some information about what you did down there and what you saw?
Well, it's funny because the documentary was supposed to be about Trump's first year. That was where this all started. And I was approached a while back to just lend myself and lend everything to this documentary. And they did a lot of interviews with a lot of anti-fascists all over the country. And Adam Bala Lowe is the director. And they were all done. They wanted their interviews, and they wanted to have scenes of, you know, Antifa out there facing off with Nazis and things. So they've been to a number of rallies, and they were all done until I told them, look, because they kept on asking me whether for other rallies that they should be at. I told them, look, you got to come out to Charlottesville, because by that time, the Nazis had rallies. They had two rallies. They had one in May that was a flash mob surprise rally. Then they had another rally on July 8th of 2017, where it was the Klan. So when they started talking about August 12th, 2017, and they were talking about how they was going to kick all kinds of Antifa ass and just kick Charlottesville's behind all over the place, we find out, and you'll see this in the documentary, Richard Spencer was saying that Charlottesville will be their presence will be particularly traumatic for the people in Charlottesville. You know, we heard all this in the lead up. So
he actually put it out there.
Yeah, he put it out there. This was at, you'll see it in the movie, because it was at a conference that was 2 weeks beforehand. And
so it was very clear what they were going to do and what type of rally.
Oh, no doubt. And that was apparent to everybody before Charlottesville. So because it was apparent to us, I needed to make it apparent to the producers, who were all done. They was getting ready to just release the documentary. And it was almost in the can that says, yo, you may need to get some more footage here in Charlottesville. Yeah. Because it looks like it's going to be something that will be useful to the movie, to the documentary. And it changed everything for it.
It became its own documentary.
It became a totally different documentary, because then they realized it wasn't about Trump anymore.
Yeah.
There was something else going on that they really had to zero in on. Mm. And that's how the documentary ended up becoming about myself versus Richard Spencer, then the executive director of National Policy Institute, because they felt that we were the two strongest voices for either side. It was ironic, because in the course of the work that I had been doing, we had already been following Richard Spencer long before anybody else even knew who he was. We've been following him since 2006, 2007. So we were the ones that had all the information about Richard Spencer when everybody started asking who the heck was Richard Spencer. So, it was perfect. And the documentary is about the two sides, really. It's pretty even-handed. And it shows us for who we are. It doesn't, and I'm gonna tell you this right now, it doesn't paint the other side in a good light at all. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the neo-Nazis are upset about the documentary. It makes them look bad. Mm-hmm. So they're online trying to make the documentary look bad, because they're trying to say that it wasn't fair to them. No, it was completely fair. This is who you are.
Yeah. I mean, you're out in public. You're being filmed. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
Right. We're not gonna sit here and talk about how Heather Hyde died of a heart attack. Sorry, we don't play that game. That's one of their propaganda bits.
Wow. Yeah, and we just had that story break probably just within the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
About the, and I think he was a fairly young guy.
James Alex Fields Jr. Right? Yeah, we videotaped him all over the place in Charlottesville. Yeah, he was 20 years old, 21 now, and he when he gets out of jail, he'll be 421. He's got 419 years.
Wow.
That's what he's looking at. That's what it looks like now.
Wow. Stupid young kid just threw his life away for hate, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the things we keep trying to tell people, is that, look, the folks who go to Charlottesville, the folks who want to participate in this nonsense, now we got this new knucklehead in Columbia that wants to make himself the big Nazi on campus.
Mm-hmm.
You're ruining your life. You're ruining your life, because that nonsense isn't long for this world, and it's definitely not long for this society. I don't care what it looks like today. Tomorrow's another day, and that day is dark for this crowd.
Yeah, I want to ask you, because you've been doing this work for decades now. Do you think that there are more white supremacists? Do you think that this is just coming to the surface, or, you know, was this always there? Are things actually, is white nationalism getting worse, or is it just coming to the surface?
It's getting louder. It's just coming to the surface, like you said. I think that, and to add to that, it's not just white supremacy. It's really just neo-fascism, because you got a lot of these neo-Nazis, a lot of these hate mongers coming in brown. You got Hispanic fascists, you got black fascists. I mean, look at the Proud Boys. I mean, they're multiracial. They're still fascists.
Okay.
They still believe in marginalizing women and Muslims. And they believe in engaging in violence to achieve those goals. So the fact of the matter is, it's kind of different. If you want to say what it looks like today, it's kind of different, in the sense that they have a little bit more facets to them now. But having said that, they're not as strong as the opposition.
Okay.
The opposition is contributing. The opposition is building. The opposition is evolving. And the opposition will fight them if they feel they need to fight them. And I'm not just talking about Antifa. I'm just talking about the society in general. That's what we saw after Charlottesville. It wasn't Antifa that went after Charlottesville immediately afterward. It was people who were never really involved before, saw that nonsense on television and said, you know what, we got to do something about this. And they did. They started doxing. They started firing people from their jobs. They started disowning family members that was a part of that nonsense. So their biggest fear really is them.
Yeah.
And Antifa directs people to them. So yeah. That's why they hate anti-fascists so much, because Antifa are the ones that will introduce the world to the things that they don't want them introduced to.
Yeah, and it's so organized now, and the internet helps so much.
It does.
I must admit, I was really impressed with, you know, the guys in Charlottesville that were holding tiki torches and all the photos, that how quickly people were able to identify and then, you know, like you said, reach out to employers, and people were losing their jobs. And, you know, I want to know if my coworker or my neighbor is holding a tiki torch at a white supremacist rally. So I'm really impressed at the organization, the structures that exist. Where can people go to get information or give information when they are either trying to find out if somebody's questionable or give information about?
Well, One People's Project, like I said, One People's Project has been around for about almost 20 years. And you can always find us at onepeoplesproject.com. Okay. We also have a news line called Idavox, IDAVOX.com. Okay. And that's where you can see the news items and such about what's been going on, what's the day-to-day looking like, and certain events and alerts that we try to put out there to let people know what they're doing. You can also find us on Twitter. Idavox is IdavoxOP, at IdavoxOPP. One People's Project is at One People's Proj. The ECT is gone. You can go to my personal Twitter at D. Lamont Jenkins, and we're on Facebook. We're on Facebook. You can find us there too. And of course, we're on YouTube, One People's Project TV. And there's a couple of YouTube accounts that we have, but One People's Project TV is the most important one.
To get the most direct information. And so I haven't seen the documentary yet, but I will be there Saturday evening. So, you know, if you want to tell us, you were in Charlottesville for how many days? Because I know this also went on for a couple of days, right?
I was there for two. I mean, I was driving down when the Tiki Torch March was happening. When we heard, and as we were driving down, we was hearing that the governor had put the National Guard on alert. And I was like, oh, brother, is that bad?
Oh, wow. As you were driving down, you were picking up stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then people in the car with me were saying that there was some fights that were already happening. I says, what the heck is going on down there already? And then we got word and we found out. Says, okay, it looks like it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow. And sure enough, that's exactly what it was. I have seen that kind of a rally many times over, most notably, as I kept pointing out, York, Pennsylvania, back on January 12, 2002, because, similar things that happened up to and including somebody driving a car into a bunch of people. No one died that day, though.
Okay.
But when everything went crazy in Charlottesville, it was just, I was just in the moment, and I mean, I got pepper sprayed and I had to deal with that. But after I dealt with that, trying to make sure that everybody else was okay, things had calmed down. And we were all just basically yelling and screaming at each other, at the Nazis that were walking around after all of this. And then I saw the ambulances driving towards Heather Heyer. I didn't know that anyone was killed.
Oh, wow.
I just saw the ambulances, and I was just like, man, It looks like something went down. And I was only a block away or so. I was at this church nearby.
And, wow.
And when I saw that, I said, okay, it looks like there's something that happened. And then it turned out to be that. We also didn't know until, that was when we realized actually that everybody was watching this on CNN and on other news outlets. And I was like, wow. And people were talking about there was shooting, and we were like, no, there wasn't. Because then we started thinking it was internet rumors. People were saying that there was people shooting and things like that. And that was like, no, that's not true. Turns out it was.
So there was gunshots down in
Charleston. So yes, there was at least one. And I was like, and that was the end of the reason. I mean, we had a whole bunch of militia guys running around with their AKs. Or the AR-15s, and we had a whole bunch of Nazis, and we had our side, including myself. We were all strapped up. We thought something was going to happen, but we didn't know that there was actual shooting yet. Wow. And we were just anticipating the worst. And this wasn't even the worst. It was the worst I've seen, but it could have been even worse. There could have been more deaths. It could have been more people just going crazy all at once. But in many respects, as bad as Charlottesville was, we got lucky. We got real lucky.
Yeah, what were the numbers like? What would you say with the alt-right numbers versus the Antifa? What would you say?
I would say we were evenly matched. I could be wrong. And that was similar to what I was talking about with York, Pennsylvania in 2002. And it was just simply a case of we all had the numbers, and unfortunately for them, it worked to our benefit.
Yeah.
We was able to fight back. We was able to turn them away, and we're still doing it in the wake of it 2 years later.
Yeah. And, unfortunately, I'm sure there's going to be more to come.
More to come, but I think that one of the reasons why we're doing this thing on Saturday is because we want to prepare people for that so that they can keep whatever damage they try to inflict on us at a minimum. So when it does go down, when things do go down, we know how to fight back, and we know that we can fight back.
Okay. And I guess it might have been, was it only about a week or so after Charlottesville that there was the rally in Boston? I went with a carload of people up to Boston to counter protest. And I think the beauty of people power and organization, I think there was about 30,000 counter protesters. And it was a few dozen of the right-wingers.
Right. And those
you couldn't even get near them.
Group,
yeah.
That particular group is still active. They still come out. They still try to do things in Boston and in Providence, Rhode Island. So
we'll
keep an eye out. I know those characters because I just came back from the rally a couple of months ago. I went to the rally in Providence, and it was the same people. And they're playing the game because there were Proud Boys and other groups And basically, they're trying to pretend that they're not racist and all that. They're trying to downplay all the white supremacy and all the neo-fascism, which is a change from what we saw in Charlottesville. After Charlottesville, the white supremacy was still there, but they had to cover it up. Now the ones that you see out there try to pretend that they're not white supremacists, but we already know who they are.
You've identified them. Yeah. So you know if you see certain named organizers, you know what their MO is.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're identified. Yeah.
And those open white supremacist groups are busy sneaking around, as we said, with Identity Europa, doing their flash mobs. The only ones that don't really sneak around is the National Socialist Movement, but they're a carny act, so we don't care.
Okay. Yeah, and I think when we were in Boston, I think they might have like used the, you know, the facade of a free speech rally, but the people identified as the organizers were all
alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the free speech thing has always been the right-wing dodge. Somehow, because they have freedom of speech, we can't use ours to be critical of them. And they keep failing to realize that that's not the case. Happily, Ann Coulter made it clear recently when she said she was against the First Amendment. So
I missed that. How did I miss that?
Oh, no. I'm putting my glasses on right now because that was trending today.
Oh, wow.
It just happened.
So this is recent. I missed it. Okay. So trending on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can find that one.
Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter. Let's see. Because I haven't posted this out. And let me try Ann Coulter First Amendment here.
Wow. So sometimes they will just destroy themselves, right?
They do it all the time. I mean, really, if you really want to, since Ann Coulter is not a fan of the First Amendment.
Wow. Wow. She doesn't like the...
Not a big fan of the First Amendment. Let me see. Let's play it safe. Because she will bug out. Basically, what she said was, she said, this was on an article that was linked on bradblog.com. It says, noted that Coulter criticized the media for being liberal and Democrats for whining about their rights under the First Amendment. They're always accusing us of repressing their speech. She said, I say, let's do it. Let's repress them. And now, granted, let's be real. Ann Coulter has been spending a lot of time lately mad because no one's listening to her. So she says a lot of things that will make that would turn into clickbait. So she knows that's not what's
happening. Yeah, I mean, I think we've got our tweeting president, who I think he does just stay up till 4 a.m. thinking, how can I be more outrageous?
And so does she, because... And so does she. So we just got to remember that that's what Ann Coulter does. I mean, that's just Ann paying her mortgage, to be real.
So. She's got to stay relevant. So she's got to completely lose it to stay relevant. She'll do that to make her money, right? Yeah,
that's exactly what it all is. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, she was talking about how the army needs to just invade Mexico, knowing full well that that's not going to happen because she's an attorney. She knows that that's against the Constitution, but it's nice to say for the base. So.
Yeah, she's gotta motivate that base. She's got to keep them excited and tuned in.
But the rest of us are just writing it down. So, okay, you want to invade Mexico, not a fan of the First Amendment. Don't think you're going to make any moves beyond your mouth.
Wow.
But then again, it all depends on us.
Yep.
But then again, that all depends on us. Because, and I know this is the guy that a lot of people don't like to quote all that much, and understandably why. But I remember back in 2011, Bill Cosby was going after Donald Trump when he was talking about how he was running for president. Bill Cosby said the only thing he's running is his mouth. Unfortunately.
We didn't take the warning. Yeah.
We dropped the ball. We were comfortable with how things were going, didn't think we had to do much. Now we know better. Now we realize that it's all hands on deck. And we have to do a lot more than just say that it's not going to happen. We have to make sure that it's not going to happen. It's called eternal vigilance.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're out there doing the work you do and exposing the people that we need to identify and be aware. And I'm so excited about our event on Saturday, so we can meet some good people that want to organize. And you know, I'm just north of Central Jersey, so we need to organize a strong North and Central Jersey contingent of people that are willing to do this work, learn together, and organize and fight fascism, right?
Indeed, indeed. So that things like what Ann Coulter says is just protected by the First Amendment, because that's as far as it goes. We have to make sure that the words do not become action. That's the mission. They can talk all the trash they want. The actions is what's going to make the difference, and we're going to keep those actions from happening.
Yeah, and we have our First Amendment right to counter-protest wherever they're at.
Definitely, and we can make more use of it. Yeah. We can make better use of it.
So thank you so much, Daryl, and I look forward to... Yep, go ahead.
No, you know, I always forget to do this.
Okay.
I should point out that I've gone Hollywood just for the sake of the fact that it's... Hold on. Close the door. That's when I start having family members coming in, and but I should point this out. And there is a movie. In addition to the stuff that we do, we also try to help people out of the white power scene too. And there was a movie based on that called Skin that premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival back in September.
Okay.
And it's going to be, hopefully it'll come out later in this year. It stars Jamie Bell, Danielle McDonald, Vera Farmiga, Bill Camp, and playing me is is Mike Coulter, a.k.a. Luke Cage.
Wow, excellent.
So excellent. When that movie comes out, you can see the IMDb page on this movie. Just check it out, imdb.com. And and incidentally, I should say that Mike Coulter, not only did he go to Benedict College at one point, where my father went to school, but he's a Mason Gross alum too.
New Brunswick, Rutgers.
So he knows my old stomping grounds. So
excellent.
This is going to be a good movie.
Wow, I can't wait to see it. So you haven't seen it yet?
Oh, I've seen it. I was there for the premiere. Excellent. And it's a beautiful movie. It's going to be great. So I needed to let people know about that, because it just shows the reception that we got from the movie shows that people need to see just how strong we are. Whether you're looking at this documentary or looking at the movie, you are going to see the resilience of us.
Wow. And you do so much work, because we didn't even really touch on it that much. This movie is about that you worked with a Nazi.
Right. His name is Brian Widener.
And you did you help him on the path of reform?
Yes, 100%. You can see, actually, there's a documentary called Erasing Hate that the movie is based on. It used to be on Netflix. I think it's on Amazon Prime or one of the, it's still out there.
And that documentary is Erasing Hate.
Erasing Hate. Erasing part comes from the fact that he had a lot of white power tattoos on his face.
Okay.
And his penance was to get them all removed. $35,000. Wow. It cost $35,000 to do it. Wow. And
you helped him through
the process. He has a heck of a story. Yes, indeedy.
Okay, so we have to look for that too. I'm so amazed at all you do and all you've done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we will see you on Saturday evening.
Yes, you shall.
Everybody, please come out to the screening of Alt-Right, Age of Rage.
Yes.
At the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in New Brunswick from 6 to 10 Saturday evening. Hope to see you guys out there. Thank you so much, Daryl.
All right. Take care.
Take care.